844-0755.
Please call our listener line and leave us a question or suggestion about a topic you'd like covered on I Work For Him. 866-713-9675, 866-713-WORK, 866-713-9675.
Who do you work for?
You work for someone.
Are you just there for the paycheck?
Your clients, your boss, your family, your car payment, yourself, or your Lord?
What if God has more for you at your 9 to 5?
Each one of us has a calling. Have you heard this before? Your workplace is your mission field, wherever that may be. You're either all in or all out. Are you for Him?
Hey, Jim, who do you work for?
I work for Him. I work for Jesus Christ.
Welcome to I Work For Him. Join the I Work For Him Nation at iworkforhim.com. That's iwork4him.com. And now your hosts, Jim and Martha Brangenberg.
Hey, welcome to I Work For Him, where it is the fastest 1 hour in Christian talk radio focused on helping you to transform your workplace into a mission field. It is our focus. It is our desire to see you recognize your workplace as a mission field, as a place of ministry. And it takes a paradigm shift in your mind. And you know, Martha, we haven't quoted Romans 12:2 in a while, but just it's so important we recognize that we are to stop copying the behaviors and customs of this world, but let God transform us let God transform our minds in changing the very way we think. Yeah. But we want to hear from our listeners.
We really do, Jim. Recently, we have really been just asking and encouraging people to call in to our listener line, which is 866-713-9675. And you can leave a message. You can let us know. You have a minute there. So a minute to win it, you know, although you're not winning anything necessarily, but a moment to share what is God doing in your workplace? What is it that you want to hear in your workplace? What are you struggling with? What is a comment? Whatever it might be that God's given you and put on your heart, this is an opportunity for you to communicate with us. We can call you back if we need to, if you want us to, but we've been, when appropriate, even playing that little sound bite on the radio to start off the question. So this is your opportunity. It's an open forum, 866-713-9675. It could be a hard question. It could be an easy question. It can be a comment. This is just for you, our listeners. So take that opportunity to dial into our listener line and let us hear from you.
And we've got on the line with us today for the whole show, Jeff Hanen. He's the author of An Uncommon Guide to Retirement. He's the founder of the Denver Institute of Faith and Work. He's involved in writing articles all over the place. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to invite Jeff to be involved in our opening segment, answering a couple of questions from our listeners. Jeff Hanen, welcome to I Work For Him.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff, we got a couple of questions I thought would be fantastic for you to be involved in helping answer. So from a listener in Tampa, what if my church constantly and likely inadvertently supports the idea of the sacred secular divide? How do I talk to those in leadership to help them understand that my calling and my work is my mission field, which is my workplace, to help them understand that I need to be equipped Basically, what this listener is asking is, how do I help my pastor and the staff of the church understand that my work really is my place of ministry? I thought you might have a good answer for that one.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's something that we get a lot from folks. And this is what I find. Most pastors, I think, the key word there is inadvertently. They're not trying to say there's a sacred secular divide and like only church activities matter and what the workplace doesn't. But actually, I found that a lot of pastors, they took a path from maybe college and went to seminary, went into church, and they don't know a lot about people's work. And so they don't maybe have an understanding of what that could look like. Mm-hmm. So some of it's, you know, theological, and we need to have conversations about work and service and vocation and influencing our world as God's people sent out into the world. And, you know, John 14 through 17 that talks about this. But oftentimes, I would say to this listener, buy your pastor lunch and walk them around your workplace. I would say start there. Have them understand the relationships with unbelievers, the opportunity to serve the well-being of our community with goods and services that our communities really need. Also, the challenges that you face, have your pastor pray for you in your workplace. If you think there's a lot of different activities that we really suggest for pastors to get involved with in terms of equipping the saints for works of service. But the number one I would say is have them go and visit a workplace. And a good way to start that off is say, hey, let's have lunch together.
Mm. You know, Jeff, a lot of listeners, we've talked to thousands of people around the country, and I don't know that we've ever had anybody say, well, my pastor talks about the significance of my work and it being a place of ministry, an operational mission field. People don't hear those sermons. How does a listener, this isn't a question that they ask, it's a question I'm asking, and I know you've got probably an opinion on this. How does one of our listeners approach their pastor and say, boy, this is something we'd really like to hear?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that, not only the having an opportunity to just talk it out, but there are some other practices as well, other than, for instance, bringing your pastor to your workplace. But there is some churches that do this really well, and I think sharing those stories are really, really helpful. So to give you an example, Redemption Church in Arizona, they do these things pretty often called all of life interviews, and they'll do them from up front in the church, and they last less than 5 minutes during a service. And they say simple questions like, okay, what's good about your life and your daily work? What's broken? And where is Jesus calling you to be a redemptive influence in that? And then they pray for them and they go. What it does, it normalizes sort of conversations about work, both paid and unpaid work, in the context of a church in a way that's really easy for a pastor to do. What I don't think we need to do is sort of beat pastors on the head saying this is yet another thing that you're not doing well. Pastors got a lot. They're dealing with crises. There's marriages. There's, funerals. There's a lot of things going on. And I think we want to come alongside pastors saying we love you or respect your calling. And there's a broader conversation we can have about the callings of those in your congregation.
Mm. That's a good word. I love that.
Along those lines, let's encourage our listeners. I know there's a lot of people, mega churches are very popular and common today. And there are a lot of people that don't have relationship with a pastor or the pastor. How can they still do what you're talking about? Because I love the idea, inviting them to lunch and walk around your workplace. Do they put that as a prayer request on the thing that goes through the offering plate on Sunday morning? How do they start that relationship that they really need?
Yeah, I think that's a challenge, and particularly in mega churches, because, if there's 10,000 people going to a church, and if you're just the attendee on Sunday, it's not like you're going to hang out with the senior pastor very much. They've got a lot going on. But one of the things I have found is quite effective, even in mega churches, is that oftentimes you'll know somebody maybe on the church board or an elder. And oftentimes people that initiate these types of things, local churches or elders, that say, hey, this is important for our witness and our community. It's important for our people's own spiritual lives. It's really important. And some of those can happen and actually be led in many different ways.
That's a great point, because of the fact that the most churches that are that large, there's a deacon or an elder actually assigned to people, So right. There's someone that they can connect to that has the ear of leadership. I like that idea, because I think a lot of people just stop because they're like, well, I don't know anybody. I don't have any, I don't have any say, but yet it's your body. It's your body of Christ that comes together that you're fellowshipping in and building that relationship. I think the deacon elder idea is a great idea to start, don't you, Jim?
Yeah,
I do. Jeff, I appreciate your thoughts on it. I got another question from a listener in Portsmouth, mm-hmm. Virginia. He writes, my son is going to be a senior in high school this next year. It seems that all public education focuses on today are students that are headed to college. My son's really good with his hands. Is there a future for him?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. So the answer is absolutely yes, but it'll be a little bit more of a non-traditional future than what we generally see in most high schools across America that have more of a college or bust sort of a mentality. There's been a lot of conversations around a lot of secular environments, not as much, I think, in Christian environments, but of this idea of we need to equip all the saints to works of service. Those that get no college, those get some college, and then those get a 4-year college degree. So there are what I would say to your listener in Portsmouth, Virginia, there is multiplying workplace learning programs, certificate programs, sometimes these are in the trades. There's one, for instance, in my hometown, Colorado, called Colorado Home Building Academy, where you can take a 8-week course, get sort of the essentials, and you can get some job experience pretty quickly and move out into the workforce. And there is a lot of good jobs, especially in the trades, for those that are skilled with their hands. And I think the role of the church in that context, too, is we need to really start noticing the work of those that are working with their hands. There was one person that I interviewed about who works with his hands. It says, you professionals, you write a paper or something, but if I make a concrete wall, unless somebody knocks it over, it's going to be there in 100 years. Mm-hmm. And I think that the worth of the work and actually taking a look at the built world around us and this son who's good with his hands and building things and saying, thank you for your work. Thank you for serving us. Thank
We'd
you for building the world
it.
That we need. We need to do more of that in our church communities as well.
When we come back, lots more with Jeff Hanen, CEO and founder of the Denver Institute for Faith and Work. And he writes a lot of stuff at jeffhanen.com, Jeff Hanen, HAANEN.com. We're going to talk about his book, An Uncommon Guide to Retirement, as well as a great article, God of the Second Shift. You're listening to I Work For Him with your host, Jim and Martha Brangenberg, and we'll be right back.
The world operates on supply and demand. If people will pay for it, someone will provide it. Jesus, the Messiah, knows that unbelievers create demand by idolizing wealth, celebrity, beauty, and political power. Believers can reduce the supply of worldliness and increase the demand for the Lord by pursuing what is true, noble, right, and pure. Chasing worldly idols wears people out. Following the Lord invigorates. So you tired? Worn out? The Messiah is calling. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. For my burden is light. You have what the world needs. Increase demand for Christ by resting in Him. Got questions? Find answers. Mark829.com.
Welcome to the I Work For Him Radio Power Thought for the Day. I'm Jim Brangenberg, host of the I Work For Him Radio program, heard 5 days a week. In the past couple of months, I've heard one word repeated out of the mouths of followers of Christ in the workplace: intentionality. Intentionality is the philosophical concept and is defined by the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy as the power of minds to be about, to represent, or to stand for things, properties, and states of affairs. Is Jesus intentional? You betcha. Should we be intentional? You betcha we should. How do we shift to this state of being? By starting with the Lord and asking what His intention is for our day, for our work, for our team, and the organization we serve. By the way, the opposites of intentionality include accidentally, inadvertently, unconsciously, unintentionally, unknowingly, and unwittingly. Yikes! Let's work on being more intentional today. For more about I Work For Him and how you can listen every day to Christ followers just like you who are living out their faith in their work, go to iworkforhim.com. That's iwork4him.com. You're listening to I Work For Him, where we help you connect what you hear and learn on Sunday with what you do in your 9-to-5. Why? Because of this whole idea that we need to transform the workplace of every Christian into a mission field, recognizing that the call on your life, the work that you do, is a gift from God, and we just need to recognize that so we will approach it differently each and every day that we go to work.
That's exactly right, Jim. And just I just want to give a shout out to our listeners, as they are going to be really intrigued by the conversation over the next few minutes. And one of the things that I want to make sure that they know, that as we're talking about this book that has been written by our guest called An Uncommon Guide to Retirement, Finding God's Purpose for the Next Season of Life, you can call into our listener line and get yourself a copy of this book. We have one to give away. 866-713-9675, 866-713-WORK. And I believe that listeners are going to find that this is not just for them to give to their dad. This is a book for them to be, you know, checking out now and seeing what God has to say to their hearts.
That's right. So investigative reporting, do we even know what that is anymore? It was supposed to be an art. An art of hearing a rumor and pursuing it with a vengeance to uncover the truth and present it to your loyal audience who's waiting with bated breath to hear what you found out. But where are all the reporters asking all the tough questions? Where are all the reporters uncovering hidden secrets and exposing them for all to see? I think I found one. Jeff Hanen, he's from Colorado. He's the CEO of the Denver Institute for Faith and Work. He writes for noteworthy organizations like Christianity Today magazine, and he does investigative reporting. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk through a couple of his major findings. The absence of discipleship ministries to people working second and third shift, people workers and other minimum wage employees, an article that he wrote about that, just phenomenal. Then we're going to talk about retirement, uncommon retirement, something that all Jesus followers need to be pursuing. Jeff Hanen, welcome to I Work For Him.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Martha and I are honored to have you. And Jeff, when I got an older brother who's a theologian, and he came across your article in Christianity Today online and said, Jimmy, you gotta check this guy out. You gotta interview this guy. And then when we were in Chicago, yeah, he calls me Jimmy. That's right. That's because he's my older brother.
That's right.
Then we were in Chicago at the Faith and Work Summit in Chicago last fall, and we got several copies of the Christianity Today, which highlighted right on the cover your article, God of the Second Shift. Before we get to that, Jeff, why don't we just, so our listeners could get to know you better, how did you come to be a follower of Jesus?
Sure. So I became a follower of Jesus when I was 18 years old, and I had a kind of a strange story. It was through reading books. That was how I became a follower of Christ. At first was books of apologetics, and then I read the New Testament for the first time. And first, I came to believe it was true. Second, I saw a transformation starting to happen in my life, a new sort of foundation for my heart and my identity. And I kept on reading. It's been a part of my life, reading and writing for a long time, and kind of wanted to solidify my Christian worldview before I really jumped in. And over time, I started to get involved in Christian ministry in my college, and kind of the rest is history.
So what was it that led you to start? I mean, you didn't just open up a book on apologetics one day and say, oh, this looks like a good reader. Is that how it happened for you? What led you to reading those books?
It almost actually did happen that way. I was a curious guy. And, you know, a story of God and Satan and angels and demons. As a kid, I grew up nominally Christian, but it kind of sounded like a tall tale. And so I read the New Testament. I started, but I had some bigger questions. And so I got into everything from some Charles Colson and Nancy Piercy to G.K. Chesterton and C.S. Lewis, and I came to believe that Christianity was true. This is actually the truest story about how the world actually is. And so it was actually an injury I had to my feet. I'm a big guy. I'm a 6'5", big, tall, white guy, and I was playing basketball, and I couldn't play anymore. So I had some time on my hands. So I sat by a pool. I read books and saw my life start to change.
That's fabulous.
So at what point in time in your life did you realize that connection between your faith and your work?
Yeah, that's a good question. On a personal side, you know, I took the path from, I did undergraduate in economics and Spanish, and then I went to seminary. And I was working in theological education and pastoral ministry for several years. And the connection for me in my own life that made this really, really critical was actually studying about missiology. So if we're interested in being on mission in the 21st century, the workplace is where people have relationships with non-believers, but it's also a way we have to show the meaning of the gospel to the world. And this showing can be in various different ways, everything from how we build a table to how we run a business to how we think about caring for patients. And so the impetus for me was thinking, we really, if we care about equipping the saints for works of service, and if we're sort of ignoring the 100,000 hours that people are going to spend at work, we're not going to be very effective at being missionaries in the 21st century. So I decided to hop in saying this is an area of importance for Christians involved in culture as well as just for people's individual daily lives.
So I want you to explain something a little bit further, because our listeners may not really have understood what you said when you were talking about showing and you know, in the example that you gave about building a table, like what is exactly that you mean by that?
Oh, yeah, good question. So the Great Commandment, a lot of our work is centered on Jesus' Great Commandment. You're to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and you're to love your neighbor as yourself. Oftentimes when we think of that term, love your neighbor, perhaps we think of maybe an isolated volunteer experience that we have or a kind thing that you said to somebody living next door. But John Stott, in his book, Christian Mission in the Modern World, says that the main way people have to love their neighbor is their Christian vocation. This is where we provide and we serve others with our life. And so I'm sitting at a table right now. If somebody wouldn't have done that act of service toward me, I would not have this table. And the table is beautiful, as well as electricity that I'm looking at, as well as a phone I'm speaking into. When people go to work, oftentimes we think, oh, that's just the job. But it's also an act of neighbor love. And I would say that in the Christian vision, it's not only about my personal success. I think that's more the secular vision. In the Christian vision, this is a way of respond to God's voice in our life, as well as we serve the needs of others in all the complexities of the modern economy.
So you wrote this article, God of the Second Shift. Why'd you write the article? What'd you find out?
Well, I wrote the article for a few different reasons. I've been doing this work for years, and over the years, we've had hundreds of people come to our events, particularly professionals, doctors, lawyers, entrepreneurs, business people. But I realized several years ago that there was an absence of fast food employees and cooks and janitors that were coming to the event, to our events. And I just wanted to ask the question, why is that? I started to get into some of the research, and about a third of Americans have college degrees, two-thirds don't. And as you start to get into the research, there is a growing divide between professionals and the working class. America's done pretty well for professionals in the last 50 years, but it's become harder and harder and harder for the working class. And I actually realized something that I think a lot of Christian business owners maybe are starting to realize as well, is that I was a part of systems that actually have people that thought and spoke like me, other professionals that are excited about their work, that want to have a big impact about their work. But I hadn't really developed a lot of even good friendships with my working class neighbors and people in our companies. I see this continually in work with business leaders, that I see a large class divide between management and frontline employees. And people they talk past each other, can't understand each other. And so one of the reasons that I wanted to write this, God of the Second Shift, is if the Faith at Work movement is really trying to equip all the saints work service in their daily work, I actually think the vast majority of those are professionals and not necessarily our working class friends. That's not universally true, but that's something that I wanted to more deeply understand, even from my own life, and what it might mean for kind of this wonderful movement that we're a part of to grow and to spread.
It's a phenomenal observation. And until I read your article, I never thought about the fact that, I mean, because we have interviewed hundreds and hundreds of faith and work focused ministries across the country. And I never really thought about the fact that they're not really touching the lives of manufacturing people in manufacturing jobs, or fast food workers, or people working, retail establishments, things like that. You know, so you're the founder and CEO of the Denver Institute of Faith and Work. How are you addressing capturing the minds of these people and encouraging them in their work? And you got 30 seconds to answer that question, then we can come back to the next segment.
Well, it's a complex answer. I think one of the things that we can start to do is what I wrote up a little bit about in the article, seeing through working class eyes. We need to start to see the world a little bit differently. I shared the story in the article about a guy named Doug Mutter, whose dad worked in a factory that made cattle feed. And it was a good job that it paid enough to support his family, but he also came home every night stinking like fish oil. And he really wanted to understand his own dad's work, as he was a journalist. And he said, look, people inside of working class jobs are not thinking about living out your calling or pursuing your bliss. You're selling your time for money. And if you want to get out of the maze, which is the challenge oftentimes of our working class neighbors, and get your kids out of the maze, you have to show up every day and do something you'd rather not do. I actually think we need to start really, really listening and reorienting ourselves to think, tell me about your life and your family and your community and your work and what's important to you.
Lots more from Jeff Hayden from the Denver Institute of Faith and Work. Hi, I'm Jim Brangenberg. Martha and I want to thank you for tuning into I Work For Him, Your Workplace is Your Mission Field radio program.
Will you take the challenge to look at your workplace as your mission field? Then we invite you to join the I Work For Him Nation today.
Consider joining the I Work For Him Nation and watch your workplace transformed by the power of God working through you. Members of the I Work For Him Nation do these things on a daily basis. Start praying for your coworkers and employees by name each and every day. Look for ways to serve those coworkers and employees in the workplace over and above what your job requires. Look for ways to befriend your coworkers or employees outside of the workplace. Be ready to pray with people in the workplace when you see an opportunity, when you see them just a little downcast. But all along, be the best and the brightest example of an employee in your position, a person who seeks and displays excellence all day long.
When you join, we'll send you an I Work For Him Nation covenant for you to post in your workplace to remind you of your high calling at work. We invite you to also extend an invitation to your friends, relatives, acquaintances, neighbors, and coworkers to do the same.
I Work For Him is on a mission to transform the workplaces in every state in the United States for Christ. We interview people from all across our beautiful country to provide the best interviews that highlight Jesus followers trying to figure out how to live out their faith in their work. As you can imagine, producing I Work For Him takes a great deal of time, energy, and financial resources. Become one of 367 and join our fundraising campaign partners and help I Work For Him reach every state in the nation with the message that our work matters to God and our workplace is our mission field. Consider also giving a gift of $25 or more to our ministry, and we'll send you 10 customized I Work For Him Gospels of John. Your donation will enable us to continue our radio program in your area. To join the nation now or donate, go to iworkforhim.com. That's iwork, the number four, him.com. And click on the Donate tab.
Now let's get back to I Work For Him.
Yeah, let's get back to I Work For Him. There's all kinds of really cool stuff coming up. Don't miss this. Don't go away. Don't go away. iworkforhim.com.
Come on, Jim. Let's get back to the show.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. The World Health Organization says the deadly Ebola outbreak in Congo is now an international health emergency after the virus spread this week to a city of 2 million people. A WHO expert committee declined on three previous occasions to advise the United Nations Health Agency to make the declaration, but other experts say the outbreak has long met the conditions. The second deadliest Ebola outbreak in history killed more than 1,600 and is unfolding in a region described as a war zone. The maker of OxyContin has been cast as the chief villain in the nation's opioid crisis, but newly released government figures suggest Purdue Pharma had plenty of help in flooding the U.S. with billions of pills, even as overdose deaths were accelerating. On Wall Street, the Dow down by 116 points, the NASDAQ dropped 38, the S&P lower by 20. More details at srnnews.com.
I'm Clayton Bromberg, the president of Underwoods. If you're interested in buying a fine-quality diamond, but might start with a smaller diamond and then over time grow that to a larger size diamond, at Underwoods we have a way to do that, and we've been doing it for more than 50 years. We call it Grow a Diamond, and here's how it works. When a customer buys an Underwood engagement ring, solitaire diamond pendant, or a pair of ear studs, we guarantee they get the price they paid for it on the purchase of any bigger diamond. Now, a lot of stores would say, big deal, we do that too, but here's the Underwood difference. We guarantee you get what you paid when you trade in your Underwood diamond, even if you're only trading up by $1. It's not that you have to trade up two for one like most jewelers ask. We've done this with thousands of customers through the years, so if you're interested in growing a diamond, come by and see us at Underwoods in San Marco, Avondale, or the Shops of Ponte Vedra.
Please call our listener line and leave us a question or suggestion about a topic you'd like covered on I Work For Him. 866-713-9675, 866-713-WORK, 866-713-9675. Hey, welcome back to I Work For Him. We are your hosts, Jim and Martha Brangenberg, as we're talking today with Jeff Heenan. And he's got lots of different titles, lots of different focuses, but really the number one thing driving his life is helping you and me to connect our faith to our work and really our faith to all of life. I first got introduced to him reading an article in Christianity Today, God of the Second Shift. And we're going to get back to Jeff in just a second about that, but he's also written this book, The Uncommon Guide to Retirement, and he's got a website, Uncommon Retirement. And he's also, if you really want to track him, just track him out online, Jeff Heenan, HAANEN.com, JeffHeenan.com. And all of that, of course, will be on our Facebook feed.
That's exactly right. And one last thing that I don't think you said, the Denver Institute for Faith and Work. So of that will be out there for your reference. But remember, listeners, as you are listening to the conversation today, if you're intrigued by especially what we're going to be talking about in the area of retirement coming up soon, you can call our listener line at 866-713-9675, 866-713-WORK. And leave me your information. We'll send you a copy of the book, An Uncommon Guide to Retirement. And while you're doing that, leave us a comment or something that you want us to talk about on the air in the near future.
Jeff, I had to interrupt you when you're answering a phenomenal question about what is the Denver Institute of Faith and Work doing to reach these second and third shift workers, these fast food workers, retail establishment workers. You know, and again, denverinstitute.org, denverinstitute.org. How are you touching lives? Because you got all kinds of manufacturing. You got all kinds of people living in the greater Denver area. How are you reaching these people?
Yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, it's a little bit of a tension for us because our organization the last 5 years was built around particularly serving professionals as they think about how to serve God in their work. So I wrote this article on the front end of thinking there's a gap here, and I think it really does start with understanding our working class neighbors and kind of what they're going through, the good work they're doing that we don't oftentimes recognize, as well as the challenges they face. So the particular stuff we're doing right now is we're working on a couple things we wrote about in the article, working on issues of job quality. What's a good job and how can we design jobs that really benefit people in all areas of the company. But we're also trying to change some of the conversations that are particularly prevalent in professional communities, even around, say, do what you love. It's a very typical thing that we hear in professional communities that you just got to do what you love and you'll never have to work another day in your life. But let's admit it, much of work done in blue-collar America isn't done out of love for job, but Christianity says the prime motivation for work isn't enjoyment, but is love of God. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as for working for the Lord, and this, I think, includes all sorts of different kinds of work. So what we're trying to do is shift some conversations in the broader Faith at Work movement that we think can start to pull in our friends that we work with and work alongside of each and every day.
You know, there's so many things here I just want to comment on. And one of them that I was thinking about, Jim, is just this whole conversation that we have had on our radio show many different business owners that their employees fall into the category you're talking about. They're either working around the shift, you know, 24-hour manufacturing, office cleaning. They're employing those people that are working, you know, the second shift, as we're referring to here, or in those blue collar jobs. And so the impact that business owner has on the people that they employ and how they're loving them and how that, you know, they're serving them for the, you know, with a kingdom perspective is really a huge impact. But it's not the only one, because not all Christian business or all business owners are believers and have that perspective. So, but I want to just give kudos to those that are seeing the stewarding of their employees as being such a high priority, because that's really one step in this direction.
Jeff, you said that it really all starts with understanding people who work in jobs that we would not classify as professional jobs. So people that are working with their hands, people that are working with their hands and feet each and every day. How do we gain that understanding? Because a lot of people who are professionals who are listening to the show don't live in the same neighborhoods as those people working, you know, manufacturing jobs or fast food jobs. I mean, how do you gain that understanding? How do you get exposure to even do that?
Yeah, that's a good, you point out that sort of geographical segregation. That is actually true. We're not living in the same neighborhoods, which I think is a problem. One of the things we can do is start to live around people that are different from us. So I think that is important. But the reality is we're not talking about an overseas missions project here. We're not talking about necessarily the homeless. We're actually talking about the majority of workers, and the majority of workers are everywhere. I think the challenge in kind of modern American life is that we become pretty relationally segregated from folks. My own experience is, you know, I had kids. I grew up a single mother, taught public school. I made it through college, got a master's degree. I got my first low-paying job, but because of my own kind of educational and social networks, I took a risk, and I met influential people who connected me more to other influential people. And then I did a swim team, and we met more professionals. And I realized that I just had this reflection this last week watching my kids swim meet of the time and the money and the commitment from two parents that are working together on this is totally inaccessible to the majority of our working class kids in our community. I think the reality is we need to get into context where we can hear and listen. And this can be as easy as if there is a janitor that's cleaning your offices, get to know them, buy them lunch, ask them about their family and what they care about, not only about their work, because oftentimes people in working class communities, they don't find necessarily the same kind of identity as professionals do at their work, but ask them about what's important to them. These are not necessarily impossible conversations to have, but they probably are uncomfortable.
Have you seen, I mean, again, it even goes to the churches that we go to. We tend to be segmented by occupation, even in the churches we go to. Do you see churches? Do you know of any churches out there? You mentioned Redemption Church in Arizona on how they are doing all of life interviews. Who's the pastor of Redemption Church in Arizona?
You know, I don't even know. My friend who works at Redemption is Jim Mullins. He leads a thing called Surge Network and do a wonderful ministry on faith and work ministry. So we talk a lot about this. I interviewed Jim for the article, Got It the Second Shift, because he grew up in a white working class family. He really helps me to understand. So that's why I brought up Redemption.
So do you see churches that are doing a really good job integrating professionals and non-professionals together?
So interesting, the sociology will tell us that a lot of even mega churches, not only mega churches though, but even a lot of evangelical churches in America, that they tend to feel much more comfortable to professionals for a few different reasons. So after the article, I'll tell you this story. It's kind of funny. After the article, I posted on my personal website, jeffhannon.com, about the article, and a guy commented on it. And the comment was about church. He says, imagine going to church and the back of your worship set is a bunch of old copiers and printers. Well, that's how I feel when there's a bunch of pallets that are on the back end of your worship set, because pallets and old wood is cool. For us, that's just old wood. That's terrible throwaway wood. And I'm like, wow. Deanna Gaines and the Etsy movement, that actually is very much a part of the ethos of a lot of kind of professionalized churches. But to say that, there is also a lot of good churches in America. They're probably not as big necessarily, but there's a lot of good churches that have working class communities that are in it. They do a lot of potlucks and barbecues. I interviewed a guy named Kent Duncan for the article. And he's doing some really wonderful work in studying and understanding his working class community and starting to notice their work as well. So there's a contrast there, but there definitely is. Robert Putnam and our kids will say there are upper class tones to a lot of evangelical worship music in America today.
So let's, before we run out of time in this segment, let's talk about your book, An Uncommon Guide to Retirement. Okay, you're talking about, you're the CEO and founder of the Denver Institute for Faith and Work, but now you're talking about retirement. What led you to write this book, An Uncommon Guide to Retirement?
Yeah, well, I care about a lot of things, but I care about areas where we haven't talked about how faith shapes the work in certain areas. So the working class, of course, is one of them to connect that. But the largest growing segment of American population today is people that are retiring and exiting the workforce altogether. So part of it was actually saying, well, what does it mean if you're retiring, you know, anywhere from 62 to 67? What does it mean to live a long, healthy, good, fruitful life, even in or even after retirement? A part of the question, too, is even I saw my own parents go through retirement and asking questions about, okay, now what? What do I do? What is my sense of purpose? What does it look like for me to live a good life? And there were some real hard, difficult questions about calling in that season of life, too. The stats around the folks that are moving into retirement, too, is pretty stunning, too. So I think there's a great opportunity as the world is aging, actually across the open world, to talk about what does mission look like later in life.
So what have you seen? Have you met some retirees that get it? Because this is a passion. This is a personal passion for mine. We actually developed and are developing the I Retire for Him covenant. Just, hey, people that are, we call them chronologically superior because of Grant Skeldon out of Dallas, Texas, who wrote the book, The Passion Generation. He wrote it specifically to retirees. And he said, please, us younger generations want to run alongside you guys. We need you to feed into our lives. Do you see anybody, what are you seeing happening? Because we need to shift this, because the people that are chronologically superior, the young people desperately need them in their lives.
Yeah, I think this is both. And you're touching on one of those things of mentoring, or what I call intergenerational friendship in the book, that we can do a better job in churches as well as in workplaces of really developing strong friendships. Yeah, there are people that are doing this really well. There are people in across America that are starting to pause and say, what is the culture around retirement? Is that something that I really want? Is the retirement vision of the dream on the beach, is that what I want or not? There's people that are starting to pause and take seasons of rest before reengaging in seasons of volunteering or work or caring for family. There are people on there. One of the people that I wrote about in the book is a guy named Gary Vandrark. He's a retired physician. He's in his late 70s. And as he has slowed down, in some senses, he hasn't slowed down. He had an enormous influence on me as well as on nonprofits around our community. He currently serves on boards. He continually teaches. He has more time for grandkids. And he's coming out of a deeply healthy heart. And so when I asked him about kind of why don't you retire, he says, look, I believe it's more blessed to give than to receive. So I keep on giving so I can get more blessing.
That's right.
I'm like, that's a good way to think about it. And there are people doing that.
You're listening to I Work For Him radio show with your host, Jim and Martha Brangenberg. We've been talking with Jeff Hanen from the Denver Institute for Faith and Work, uncommonretirement.com, jeffhanen.com, denverinstitute.org. For those of you listening on our affiliates that broadcast our 30-minute program, head to our website, iworkforhim.com, to get our expanded thoughts on today's guest, as well as additional insights and practical takeaways from the program. For the rest of you, stick around. Martha and I will be right back with more. You're listening to I Work For Him.
Most condo communities include water as part of the monthly fee. Some residents conserve to subsidize those that consume. Stop paying for your neighbor's water. Have Think Utility Services install individual meters and pay only for what you use. Decrease water consumption by 20 to 40%. For over 20 years, Think Utility Services has been helping condo communities save. Call 888-MY-METER today. That's 888-MY-METER today. Go to thinkutilityservices.com.
Would you ever own an abortion clinic? Would you own a business that profits from pornography? Did you know that there's a chance these types of businesses may be found throughout your investment or retirement accounts? Call Luke and Dave with Bel Air Wealth Management today. They specialize in biblically responsible investing options and can align your investment and retirement accounts with God's values. Call Luke and Dave at 727-798-4188. That's 727-798-4188. Online at bwmadvisors.com.
As an apartment management company, are you charging market rent but seeing decreased profit? Turn the trend around by installing individual unit water meters and billing residents for what they consume. Lower property water consumption 20 to 40% and put utility costs back in the bank. Think Utility Services, in business since 1957, has helped property management companies increase profit for over 50 years. Find out how today. Call 888-MY-METER or visit thinkutilityservices.com. That's thinkutilityservices.com.
Luke and Dave with Bel Air Wealth Management are longtime supporters of I Work For Him and have a passion for sharing biblically responsible investing with the I Work For Him nation. Have you ever considered that your investment portfolio contains businesses that turn a profit by working in direct opposition to God's Word? Call Luke and Dave at Bel Air Wealth Management at 727-798-4188. That's 727-798-4188. And find out if your investment or retirement portfolio aligns with God's heart.
Hey, welcome back to I Work For Him. As Martha and I are talking today with Jeff Hanen. You can check him out in a lot of places, but probably the best place to find him is under his name, Jeff, HAANEN.com, JeffHanen.com. There's just so much out there that Jeff is, that you're connected into. You know, right before the break, we were talking about your book, An Uncommon Guide to Retirement. And is it possible for Christ followers to find biblical purpose in their retirement years?
Well, yeah, of course. I think we can find find biblical purpose in any years. One of the things that's interesting, I put a little quote from Dwight Moody, it says, don't expect to wake up when you're 65 and all of a sudden have this sort of magical sense of purpose, what you're going to do with your life. If you didn't have it in your daily work, you probably won't have it in your retirement. So these conversations go hand in hand about work and retirement. But one of the things that I talk about in the book that I think is an important practice for us to consider is that a lot of people move into retirement and immediately move into the vacation mentality. Here's all the things I could never do, and I'm now going to do it. I'm going to see these things and go these places. But
The word vacation comes from a Latin root, which means to empty. And oftentimes we try to empty or vacate our lives rather than take a season of deep rest and actually ask what God is calling us to do, what God is calling us to do for this next season. So to your question of what does it look like to find biblical purpose, I actually think it's a little counterintuitive, but I think first we need to think about taking a season of sabbatical rest to quiet the heart, heal past wounds, and reengage as Jesus' as followers in the next season of life.
So those are points that you're talking about in this book, An Uncommon Guide to Retirement?
Yeah, that's right. That's the second chapter is on sabbatical. The third is on calling. And then the fourth is on work.
Beautiful. So don't forget to callers can call in and get a copy of the book at 866-713-9675. I sound like a broken record today, don't I? But I want to make sure that the listeners know that, you know, this is an intriguing conversation, but we cannot possibly talk about every aspect of it. As you've heard, Jeff Hanen has a big vision, big purpose on his life. And so one of the things that you can get as a resource today is An Uncommon Guide to Retirement by calling 866-713-WORK.
And also check out on Facebook, we've got a new Facebook page, I Retire For Him, right?
Yes, it is not up to speed yet,
but I just saw
my dad just posted another thing while we've been talking on the air. So people can check out our very new, very undeveloped I Retire For Him Facebook page.
And it's I Retire, the number four, him. And understand, our point is to be just driving this conversation. It's not like we're going to have some product that we push, but there's so many great organizations we run into out there that are just opening up this idea, Jeff Hanen, that retirement, that it's not supposed to be 30 years of getting seashells, playing golf, and watching the grass grow in your backyard, that God never intended for us to check out.
Yeah, that's a good question. The stats say that there's two activities in retirement that grow more than any other. One is entertainment, and number two is home improvement. And so I think as to push across those and think those are fine, you know, we're not against taking a vacation or watching the occasional movie and hanging out with your friends. Those are all wonderful things too. But the calling of God, the mission of God, those things don't change. What I think that we do need to think about and really embracing in our Christian communities is pushing against sort of entertainment vision of retirement and embracing what I would call an elder vision. There's a strong tradition in the Bible of elders, people of wisdom and blessing that were there for a future generation that you shared your experience and your life with. And that had a critical influence even on the shaping of Israel's history. And not only in terms of elder, in terms of like the New Testament office, something to do at your church, but somebody that is actually having influence. Cicero says the crowning grace of old age is influence. And I don't think we think about that in retirement. We don't think about you actually think about retreating from life rather than saying, how am I going to shape future generations? There's a great opportunity for Christian people to say, as the world ages, we can be engaged as elders in our communities.
So how is the Denver Institute for Faith and Work engaging the retirement community, the Christ-centered retirement community, that have past professional or work experience? How are you engaging them with your younger members?
Oh, with our younger members. Well, that's a good question. We're just starting off with some resources and thinking about this because I think it's an underdeveloped conversation. We've got some resources at uncommonretirement.com. We are doing an event in August here in the Denver area for pastors and financial advisors, as well as folks moving to retirement, but really financial advisors are the people more than any that talk about retirement and getting a biblical vision into their hearts and minds, I think is really critical as well. And then I'm going to be talking too about the ways churches can spur on intergenerational friendships inside of congregations. Oftentimes, I think one of the models of church in the last, since really the Seeker movement started in the 70s and 80s, has been age segregation. Youth group over here, then the young marrieds, you know, and the young singles, and then you have the seniors ministries. But really, we need to start pushing against that and bringing together the preschoolers and the elderly, the older folks, and then people in retirement, even young professionals. Like, we need to start bringing them together and asking questions of common purpose.
I love that. And you're right. That's something we've pounded the drum on several times. We've got to stop age-segregated small groups.
Yeah.
Because because chronologically superior people need to be hanging out with the younger people because the younger people desperately need them. So people can check out Uncommon Retirement online, uncommonretirement.com, uncommonretirement.com. And so I want to talk more. There's so much more stuff I want to talk about, but you've got a manifesto for financial advisors. Talk about that. What is this manifesto all about?
Yeah, so I put this as an addendum on the website, uncommonretirement.com. But one of the reasons I wanted to speak to financial advisors, we work with financial advisors at Denver Institute on how faith can shape our work, of course, as a financial advisor, as well as visions of investing. But the people that talk about retirement more than anybody else in America are people who work in financial services. And I think there's a good way to talk about it, and there's a very broken way. I think the broken way, the culture way, says we need to drive people to give more and more money to save for retirement that they probably won't save enough and cause kind of unending concern and fear of whether or not I've saved enough. Actually, the stats that when people retirement is that they tend to give less money when they move into retirement because they're afraid financially. I think there's a good way to push against this. And a few things that I talk about in this manifesto is that financial advisors have a really important part to play in an aging world in helping people save money for when they can no longer work, to live a life of generosity, to invest in businesses that align with God's good purposes for the world, to spend wisely. And then to really help people to, I think it's something that become cultural, to say, what do seasons of work and rest look like over the course of a lifetime? So the idea of you're going to save up your big principal and then spend it all down for 20 to 30 years, that kind of needs to go to bed, I think. Leviticus 25 has this vision of you work for a season and then you rest for a longer season and then you work and then you rest. Actually, I think that's a biblical paradigm based in the Ten Commandments of seasons of work and rest that makes sense. And I think financial advisors could start asking some better questions there.
That's a good word. Love that.
It really is, because we were, you know, we just met with a friend of ours who was on a sabbatical for 3 months. And that is a lost concept, I think. I don't even think our kids would know what that word means. Hmm. And yet, what a beautiful thing. You know, it's just like training for anything. You train and then you rest. And you train and you rest because your body needs to recuperate. Yep. I'm really drawn to this idea.
we have one of our listeners from Canton, Georgia, last night said to me, Jim, you probably could use a sabbatical after 6.5 years on the radio. I'm like, yeah, that would be a dream. If I could get a 72-hour sabbatical, it'd be really neat. All right, Jeff, I want to talk about the Denver Institute for Faith and Work. We got a couple minutes left. What is the biggest issue that you see in your community? And I know Denver's a big area with millions of people. What's the biggest issue you see in your community that the Denver Institute for Faith and Work is addressing?
Well, there's a lot in our community that we're addressing, but if I was just going to choose a single one, it would be this. Work is not about your personal success or yourself. It's about loving God and loving others. We live in a very independent, very hyper-individualistic culture where people, whether they're working or whether they're going to the mountains on the weekend, tend to think about how this fits into their own best version of themselves. And I say, if we're going to push on anything as Christians, this is about dying to self and living to God and living for the sake of our neighbors. So if we're going to change any one paradigm in our city as well as in others across America, I'd say the vision of work about your own success versus responding to God's voice and caring for the needs of our neighbors, that would be the biggest issue. Though we talk on all sorts of civic issues in our city.
Speak to our listeners. Last question, 25 seconds. Give them a little advice on today that they're listening. What's the best way that they can express living out their faith in their work today?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it starts with our personal spiritual formation, taking your personal, time of prayer, Bible study, celebration, bringing those, integrating those into your own work life. People are going to look at the people of God and think, is that something that I want? Or is that person isolate their faith from their work? Does that person, are they angry? Well, what does that person look like? And so who we become is the best witness we have.
Jeff Hanen, thank you so much for being on I Work For Him today, for sharing about the Denver Institute for Faith and Work, about uncommonretirement.com, and about the God of the Second Shift, your article. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to I Work For Him with your hosts, Jim and Martha Brangenberg. We're Christ followers. Our workplace, it's our mission field, but ultimately, I work for him.
America's First News with Gordon Deal at 5 a.m. Hugh Hewitt at 6. Del Wamsley at noon.
Dave Ramsey at 2 and Larry Elder at 6 p.m. This is Talk 100.3.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
Or if that resume was from someone who
worked 12-hour shifts at the recycling company with my dad, who's 72. That taught me a work ethic that I carry with me every day.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone.
Growing up where I did, a lot of things could have gotten in the way of my goals. But I learned to push through, and that's what I bring to work every day.
So maybe it's time we look beyond the resume and look to grads of life. Discover new ways to develop great talent that are so much more than what's on paper at gradsoflife.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
Does your basement or crawl space have a damp, musty smell? Well, watch out. That's a sign of too much moisture and not enough ventilation. And that can mean increased mold growth and the buildup of harmful toxins and gases. Don't bother with a dehumidifier. It just circulates the same unhealthy air. Get the Wave Ventilation Unit. It will transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Call 1-888-964-WAVE. That's 1-888-964-WAVE.
FM 100.3, W262 AG.